Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm a control operator for the Limark Technical Net. It's been going on for more than 44 years, and every Sunday night at around 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and we chat with each other. We entertain each other, we inform each other, we learn from each other, we teach each other. And I thank you once again for joining us this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual links. If you wish to send me email, one of my email addresses is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. You want to reach Paul, tell him about some space or NASA-related story you would like him to take a look at and offer his opinion, you can reach him via the email address, spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer links to interesting articles and interesting YouTubes. I found a new YouTube from a bunch of people very interested in the donut solid-state battery and offering some thoughts on what it might be. Again, there's no patent published, so and there's no battery in the wild to disassemble, so this is kind of conjecture and some educated guessings on their part. But again, if you type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, it'll bring you to the link page, and at the top of the link page is something called Uncovering the Details on Donut Lab Solid State Battery. So if you're interested in following up on the discussion that we had last week on the subject, that would be as good a place as any. Unfortunately, there's something weird going on with our chat room. I can't get into it. Hopefully it's a small problem on their end and they'll correct it soon, but for the time being, no chat room. As always, I'm offering a audio stream on the Internet. If you don't have access to the repeater directly, you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you an audio stream on your Internet connection. So as long as you have an Internet connection, you can listen in to the TechNet, and I keep it live the rest of the week because a few people asked me, please do, so I've been doing that. And as always, I'd like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of those that have either moved out of the area or, unfortunately, become silent keys. Let me drop for a second. I'll come back, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, very short artificial intelligence segment. Not really a heck of a lot going on right now, but we'll be following it up as need be in the future. We will, as always, ask for people to hit the push to talk and give us topics, comments, questions, or topics for discussion. Preferably, the first few should be amateur radio related, but we'll deal with any kind of science and or technology question or topic discussion that you want. That should hopefully take us to approximately 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. It should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So if I don't get kicked off of All Star too many times and my shack works the way it's supposed to and the repeater works the way it's supposed to, that's our plans for tonight. So I hope we're able to accomplish it. Let me drop for a second and I'll give you my 2 cents worth as far as the state of artificial intelligence this past week. Okay, not that very much. A lot of people have been hinting around. Johnny Ives is a gentleman who used to work for Apple. He was the main designer for the shapes and configurations of the devices. He didn't do the electronics. He just did the aesthetics. He kind of got into a partnership with Sam Altman, the guy who runs OpenAI, and they're hinting at they're going to be selling stuff. So they came up with a very short announcement that they're working on on wireless air pieces. Now, you know, Apple has the AirPod. A lot of companies have wireless air pieces. There's nothing particularly that special, but supposedly, as you would guess, with Sam Altman involved, it's going to have some aspect of artificial intelligence added. So we'll see how much artificial intelligence can change a basic concept like wireless earpieces. So that was a very vague announcement. Also, ChatGPT, in the fine tradition of a lot of things on the Internet, is going to bring people ads because they're trying to monetize this. They're bleeding billions of dollars. They're not making that much. And so another stream that they're looking into is the idea of embedding advertisement in their browser that connects to OpenAI's ChatGPT. So we'll see how annoying their ads get. Anyway, that's pretty much it for artificial intelligence. Unfortunately for this week, who knows what next week will bring. So on to our main segment, which is questions, topics, and, comments. If anyone has any, especially if they're amateur radio related, please hit the push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, and whether they are amateur radio related or science and technology in general.
Science and technology in general, and to exceed.
Okay, Wes recognized. Would anyone like to join Wes on the list for tonight?
K2AJO.
Yes? Yes, would you like to give me your call sign a little bit slower and your first name?
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Oscar Jose, no traffic.
Okay. Anyone else with questions, comments, or topics for tonight? Please hit that push to talk.
KA2UTF Science and Technology.
Okay, could you give me your call sign a little slower and your first name?
KA2 United Tango Fox, Gary.
Okay, Gary recognized. Anyone else want to put your name on the list for tonight? Okay, hopefully as time goes on. Oh, okay, Sam, I'll put you down. Is it amateur radio?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to put your name down on the list for tonight? Okay. Wes, is this a simple question or comment or topic, or should we kind of slip you down farther on the list just so the other people can come and go?
Take the ham radio related first. No, it's just similar for whatever the situation I want to discuss about.
Okay, very good. So, Sam, we're pulling up you up to the top of the list because you're going to talk about amateur radio with stuff. So what's your question or comment for tonight?
Well, first of all, I would prefer maybe to be dealing with this a little bit later because I am looking for input from the other members of the club. My topic was antenna analyzers.
It's okay if you want to say where you originated on the list. That's okay. We'll deal with it. So we'll get back to you soon. So, Wes, what's your topic or question for tonight?
Okay. Well, I want to make a summary for 2026 with the drone situation, the FCC regulation, the situation with DJI and Autel drones, and the Department of Commerce decision. So if you could say a few words about it, and then I add the rest.
Well, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be that much to say about it. There's always a degree of paranoia when it comes to Chinese manufacturers, because Chinese businesses have very close ties to their government and the Chinese Communist Party. And so, you know, the rest of the world is always a little concerned that the Chinese have put backdoors into their products and made them dangerous for the people that buy them out of the country, that they could be spying on us, they could, you know, kind of take over command and control because of something hidden deep into the chipset. And they were talking about this for a long time. Matter of fact, there are Chinese companies that sell router and wireless access points that the White House has suggested they're going to not allow it. They disallowed it for all government sites so that the telecommunications equipment can't come from China. And so recently they decided to formalize the blocking of DJI drones into the country, and DJI has a very good reputation and sells a lot of drones. I don't know if they still sell a lot to Ukraine, but they were selling them at one time. And the Commerce Department and the general xenophobia has decided that it's too much of a security risk, and so you won't be able to purchase DJI drones in the future. DJI makes all kinds of other things. As far as I'm aware, you can still buy their cameras and such, but the drones are forbidden for the time being. That's as far as I understand. There's nothing kind of esoteric or strange about it. It's good old paranoia, a little touch of xenophobia, but. Who knows what they're putting into those devices. It's very easy to build backdoors on electronic equipment, and it's very difficult to detect them. Anyway, that's my two cents worth.
Okay, interesting. The addition to that would be that, of course, DJI and Autel drones are forbidden to be authorized, approved and sold in the United States, so the FCC doesn't give the authorization for using them, and without that you cannot use them. And the Department of Commerce decided not to restrict the import of all Chinese-made drones into the country, which may provide some relief for U.S.-based drone users. And when we talk about the film industry that uses many of them, and we completely omit the private users of DJI drones, we're still dealing with some drones that were made for the farmers, and they have no components right now to be replaced, and also a part of the electronics that was used by American companies to make machinery for the farmers is right now crippled, to be gentle with words. We're talking about Chinese influence. You mentioned routers and the access points, yes, there is a significant change, but it's for good. I was thinking that if Chinese are no longer competing that much with American companies, we're still going to have the same pricing that we had before, and yes, we do. The price of American-made or made by American companies in China or wherever else in Korea of devices in our network, home network or business network, are still the same. Didn't grow up. In price. I'm not sure how long it's going to be dead, but in electronic industry, there was a show not a few days ago, in Las Vegas, electronic show. There was plenty of robotic devices that were presented there, and I saw only a few made in China, and most of them were Korea and Japan. And also, the machinery and robotics for farmers were there present, and there was quite a crowd around it. So that would be my 5 cents. I'm not sure if you want to add more and to
Yeah, we talked about the Consumer Electronics Show last Sunday. It ended, I think, a few days before last week. There were robots, Chinese robots. They have relatively less expensive and reasonably capable models. You know, they're not quite up to that Boston company. I forget the second name. Name and its full name, but Boston Dynamics. I forget. Anyway, but yeah, there were Asians of all kinds. There were Korean, there were Taiwanese, there were Chinese, there were Japanese. A lot of them, not really particularly revolutionary. Not anything I didn't see a month before. There were no particularly dramatic artificial intelligence presentations or robot presentations. They didn't kind of announce anything particularly new and exciting. A lot of cheap stuff to the name for no particular reason. I even mentioned last week that Samsung, I think, for the last 18 years has been trying to sell people on the idea of a refrigerator with a screen on the front and a speaker and a microphone on the front where you could do AI and it'll give you advertisement. If ever you felt the lack of advertising, the Samsung refrigerator that they were showing at the Consumer Electronics Show fills that need. Apparently, you can stand in front of your refrigerator and be told about all the types of things that you could buy to fill the refrigerator, which I'm sure is a wonderful experience for someone.
Yeah, in addition to what I said, the American restriction to DJI and drone industry in China actually helped Ukraine, because China was delivering parts and drones to Russia and to Ukraine as well. And when American restriction took place, Ukrainian friends reported to me when I spoke to them that the price goes down because they must sell. And the major market for them was United States of America, and it's not any longer. So in some instances, the price dropped 50% for Ukraine to make the drones and the parts, mostly with motors and electronics. Ukrainian makes their own software, so they are independent in this matter. and they were able to push DJI to make the hardware available for Ukrainian software to be implemented. So now the Russian have a much more difficult task for it. So that's it. Thank you very much, and to appreciate it.
Okay, very good, Wes. Yeah, I mean, the Chinese are kind of fair-weather friends to the Russians. You know, they'll make a profit off of anyone, including the Russians and the Ukrainians. And, you know, as it is, the Chinese are kind of staring down at places like Siberia. And, you know, if the Russians blink, the Chinese might just grab a lot of the territory that historically they owned before the turn of the 20th century. You know, that was the era where Europe basically robbed the Chinese blind. They of course sold a lot of opium all throughout China and kind of destroyed their society, and then took a lot of their possessions, which including Siberia in the case of the Russians. So there's no real love loss. Russians have fought Chinese, I think, only about 20 years ago. I think something like 30 years ago, one of the Russian leaders called up whoever was our president at the time and just kind of asked the question, would we mind if they nuked China? So that's not the basis of a great friendship. Anyway, any other comments about anything that we brought up, me and Wes? Otherwise, we'll move on.
Not much. I would say a few words about the quality. If we try to imagine how much money Americans spend for Chinese junk, not good quality, and they're still catching themselves in spending even more, and then comparing to Vietnamese or a Korean, which is a quality. How come is possible that America didn't take the lesson and stop buying that stuff? I recently spent like $8,000-$10,000 for the tools and machinery, mostly. Doesn't matter. Some of the parts of that machinery was made in China, and then I spoke to Hitachi, and the Hitachi guy told me that they specially made Metabo, which is the Hitachi under different name, because making parts in China is much cheaper, and Hitachi name wouldn't suffer from that lack of quality under the Metabo name, although Japanese are trying to keep quality good. So I have noticed that when I was assembling the machinery that plenty of things or parts that were made in China were, it's like somebody envisioned a good stuff, but they somehow manage to screw it up. I mean, it's like how much you need to be, not careful, I'm trying to be gentle with words, not careful to screw up something that is impossible to screw up. And that's about the level. Back to you, Antoine.
Well, AC2GS, by the way, we've kind of talked about this before, but I'll bring it up again. One of the problems is the Chinese manufacturing has grown much better than it was years ago. And all countries have that problem at the beginning. After World War II, Japanese manufacturing was considered junk. It was such a bad idea to label anything made in Japan that the Japanese went to the trouble of renaming a town USA, USA, and they would stamp all of their products made in USA, which most people thought meant the US of A. So, but they went up that learning curve, and their products are very high quality. And some Chinese products are still very high quality. You know, iPhones are made in China. That might change, but I mean, as of today, I believe they're still making a great deal of high-quality iPhones in China. If you have the proper quality assurance programs, if you force people to do things the right way, it can be done in China. The problem, among other things, and I hope no one takes this as racist, but in communist China, there seems to be a kind of get-by mentality where it's absurd to waste your time overdoing things. You build things to a low but passable quality, and that's the only thing. There's no pride for many people in manufacturing, and so if you don't have an aggressive quality assurance program, people will cut all kind of corners, and you'll end up with real cheap garbage. But again, if you're able to kind of control the quality, these days you can get very high quality. You know, DJI is, you know, most people, if they want a drone, they want a DJI drone. They don't want a drone from some other company. And the same with 3D printers. Bamboo Labs is a Chinese company that makes very high quality 3D printers. So it's possible to have high-quality Chinese manufacturing. You just have to work hard at the quality assurance level.
Yes and no, and to exchange. Actually, you said everything right. The only thing is that when you mention iPhone, I would add Hewlett Packard. Hewlett Packard made also in China. So it was American project, American money, and American control over the product made by whoever. Doesn't matter. They want, I mean, screw up something that is almost impossible to screw up. You got to be a genius to screw up something that is impossible to screw up. And I found in Chinese products so many of them. I mean, it's like either they do it specially or how low you have to be. That's my opinion about it. But when you're talking about Tesla or any other company that makes something in China, the control that is there, and the technological process that is involved is American. Only the physical involvement of the Chinese workers is present, where you are actually not able to screw up because you are being watched. So I believe that's the secret of quality. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you know, I agree with the, you know, you have to supervise. I don't think it's American-manufactured equipment that's manufacturing a lot of even good stuff in China. China has built up through the years. Again, it's a gradual, progressive thing, a better and better system. They have... you know, in Shenzhen, you could pretty much buy anything. You could buy heavy machinery. You could buy small, surface-mount components and everything in between, you know, a couple of blocks away from each other. There's an enormous supply infrastructure. And the manufacturing, again, if you want to invest the money, you can buy high-quality heavy machinery to manufacture things, or you can, you know, find junk and just relabel it, and, you know, sometimes they do that. They have occasionally a vendor will find some car odorizer, and relabel it as a air conditioner system, and you know, charge you a couple of 100% markup for basically something that just blows a little air someplace. And then there are other ones like the drone company or Bamboo Labs or other companies that are coming up. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, happens when the very inexpensive Chinese electric vehicles are sold in Europe and probably Canada. I don't know when they'll be sold in the United States, whether they'll hold up. There's something like a third of the price of Teslas, and a lot of people who've tried them seem to like them. I haven't heard too many horror stories. So, like all things, you don't kind of pop out of the egg as a fully formed manufacturing giant. You take baby steps, and eventually, if investment continues, you become one of the big players in manufacturing. China manufactures a great deal of the products sold throughout the world. The United States is not a real manufacturing country anymore. It's a service industry. It does some heavy machinery, but less and less, it seems, every year. So, if it was consistently junk, they would have a problem. The problem is that if you don't want to pay a lot, you can get junk. And a lot of companies, especially American companies, will kind of do cutthroat pricing and leave the manufacturers in China to make it the quality that they feel like. And that's where you get the junk from a lot of times.
Yeah, one thing that is noticeable, 70% of American universities and higher education facilities are occupied by Chinese. And they have money to do it. We have 1.5 billion of Chinese. Everybody wants to eat. And they have more engineers right now than population of United States of America. Just engineers. So yes, we may say they have a potential to grow up, but at the same time, the junk is still coming to the United States. And one of the reasons is not because they steal the technology, but the whole system is made just for the American company to go to China and be allowed to make something if they allow Chinese to use the technology. But anything patented, not patented, that shows up on the market is automatically copied and then presented for much, much, much less to the user. Is it good? And to HGM.
Well, I don't know. Moral questions, is it good, is it bad? They steal intellectual property. They have no interest in paying people licenses for things. They reverse engineer things, and although they have more engineers, I think our engineers have more of a talent in kind of reinventing the wheel and doing things outside of the box. In China, most of the education system is based on rote, and so it's kind of difficult for the average Chinese engineer to come up with a new idea. They're very good at utilizing an old idea, of copying an old idea, not so much kind of shiny new ideas. Discoveries don't particularly come out of China. And this is not, I hope, taken as any kind of a racist comment. It is not inherent to the ethnic group. Taiwanese Chinese are highly inventive. It's simply that Chinese communist educational system kind of beats the outside-the-box thinking out of your head. So it's more of a cultural-slash-political reason for that. But, I mean, they also have more they probably have too many engineers, because lately I've been seeing a lot of stories about how Chinese students graduate with honors from the university, and they end up having to deliver food because they can't get an engineering job. So there's probably a glut of engineers, and that's going to unfortunately self-correct by not getting these people established in the chain as actual engineers. You know, in the United States, we had a similar glut. When I was going to college, Columbia used to send me love letters asking if I would like to be part of their engineering department, and I had no particular interest. Plus, at that point, you couldn't get a job to save your life. So, we have the number of engineers that we sort of need for our economy. If you have a service economy, there's far less need for engineers than if you have a manufacturing economy.
Well, yeah, actually, I agree with that totally. The only question is there any case of a Chinese kid who is paying plenty of money, and the parents are paying plenty of money for that kid to graduate as an engineer in the United States and then eventually goes to China and delivers the pizza? I don't believe that's the case, actually.
Well, again, it sort of depends on... Usually the kids who come over from China are the children of Chinese Communist Party bigwigs. So they got a lot of money and power to get their kids a job. But, you know, there are a lot of other engineering schools. And unfortunately, if you've been looking in the newspapers, the standing of some of our schools is starting to crumble. I think Harvard is still up there, but there's a few other major schools that have kind of lost their footing with, say, European and probably even some major Chinese universities. You know, just because we're the number one guy doesn't mean that we have a lock on it. We act like idiots and do stupid things repeatedly. We, too, could lose our standing, you know. The Roman Empire was an incredibly powerful, strong empire, but it fell, and all empires can fall. So, you know, we can't kind of stand behind our laurels and say, you know, we're number one all the time, unless we kind of treat the world like we're number one instead of that we're going through a midlife crisis.
Yeah, actually, I sort of did the video standing about the video was made by the Chinese guy, extremely good in English, absolutely amazingly good in English, with much better English than mine. The young guy who presented the story that in 17th century there was the Spain Empire, and it collapsed. And before it collapsed, suddenly the money went out to Germany. Then they presented that another empire was Austro-Hungary Empire, and with plenty of money, and it collapsed. And then there was the empire that was ruled by British, and it collapsed. And then it moved to the United States. And it was trying to suggest that United States is going to be, in United States is going to be the same, and we are in phase three right now, and soon, a few months from now, or maybe not long from now, we're going to have a collapse, total collapse, because the banks are moving money quietly to another place. Didn't say. So what I'm saying is, when we're talking about the Chinese, and everything that is related to Chinese, we don't know what to believe at. What is the propaganda, the communist propaganda, what is the true, what is not, when they present us the car that's supposed to be three times cheaper and the same quality as Tesla is, let's say. We don't know what is the truth. All we know is that we have a constant junk. Everywhere we move, we have a constant junk. And we know that there is a 1.5 billion people that rely on our money, that we're spending on the junk. So where is the truth? Enter Aegean.
Well, like all things, some of it is true and some of it is false. The problem is, I mean, that's why you need some kind of intelligence or agency to figure out who's lying about what. And, you know, no one's 100% telling the truth, and no one's 100% lying. BYD is an actual company. You know, it's not allowed in the United States because we block it, but other countries have BYD electric vehicles. And, again, I don't hear that many complaints, and I don't think the Chinese have the power to censor, you know, outside of China. So, you know, if you bought a BYD and you found it to be a cheap piece of junk, I would assume there'd be more than a few people on YouTube that would explain why it's a piece of junk. In many ways that the Cybertruck has had so many YouTubes demonstrating what a piece of junk it is. So, you know, although I have heard a lot of the stories of cars in general that are Chinese that are garbage, you know, it's always, again, subject to change. There was a point in the previous century where Japanese products went from junk that no one in their right mind would buy, because I remember them, you know, they were in that condition when I was a little kid. So I remember going to the Woolworths. It's a dollar store, and you would buy a toy, and a cheap toy, and you'd figure out that it was Japanese, and because you would kind of pull it apart, and you would figure out that someone in Japan took a tin can, and remolded that had been sold as a container for, you know, some kind of food product, and repurposed it to a little toy for inexpensive thing. And then the next time you blink, and this Sony equipment that you're paying a premium for the brand name. So, you know, that could happen. You never really know. I remember in the 1980s, everyone was very concerned in the United States, and to a degree even in Canada, that the Japanese were overtaking us, that they had actually, in the long run, won World War II and not lost it. They were buying up a lot of historic, prestigious real estate in the United States, and there was a lot of paranoia. There were a lot of decent movies and novels written on the subject, and one day the economy in Japan collapsed, and no one has worried about the Japanese much since then. Will the Chinese hit that point? One sec, George. Will the Chinese collapse at some point? You know, they have a lot of empty ghost buildings that certainly will collapse. But, you know, they own their own economy, so they have much more control than we can here in America. So, you know, only time will tell. Yes, George, what would you like to say?
Japan was not an enemy. Japan was victor from World War II, and we were rebuilding it. And yes, we had seen what was paper mache going into the better automobiles by the 1980s, and the better electronics by prior to that, even by the 1970s, we let it go. And that was part of our policy in helping them because we were victor in World War II. And that was our promise to them. They are our ally. China is not. So we're going to think of just to flip this to another side of it, and I just do not want to describe it all to offend anybody. It's ally versus non-ally. And we've got to consider how we're going to support not only their markets, but our commerce. Back to you, Roy.
Well, okay, they continue to be our political ally, although you never know what the future brings. But there's a difference between political allies and completely economic allies. They competed economically with us increasingly up until about the 1980s, and I distinctly remember the concerns of a lot of people, especially when they started to buy out a lot of real estate in Manhattan. They were riding high, and they were basically buying up any real estate that had any particular value, and it was frightening people. You know, as long as you're kind of number two and we say number one, everyone's happy-go-lucky. If you start to make noises that you might overtake us economically, no matter how politically friendly we might be, people start to get antsy. So I distinctly remember those vibes, and I remember reading those books with very strange anti-Japanese undertones to it. There was a lot of suspicion going on, even if they're politically our allies.
Well, the same thing is going on with
Japanese
Germany.
Japanese were not communists.
Except that Germany is not participating.
So that's the distinction
with the level that
between
we
Chinese and Japanese, do you agree?
Over the last 80 years. So, you know, there's a difference here with countries that have politically aligned with us versus countries who politically don't want to align with us. There's a longer way to travel. There's a longer way to go with a country who does not politically align with us than there is with just a country who we want to economically align with. Two hurdles versus one.
Here it is.
Okay, but... Yes? Did someone want to say something? Okay, I guess not. I understand. It's a little bit more fear-building to have a political adversary get stronger. But I am sure that, you know, at the end of World War II, when the British Empire kind of deflated and we came into our own, as much as even though we had wars in the beginning, we have very strong attachment to the United Kingdom and such. But I'm sure they didn't take it particularly well as they kind of watched us kind of grow into a superpower while they became just a friend of the United States instead of the British Empire.
Okay, Roy, I'll let this go. With ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles, thank you for bringing me in here.
Okie doke. Any other comments on this before we move on to the next?
I don't like this.
Yes, can you give me your call sign again? Okay, I assume that's a no. Let's move on then. Gary, KA2UTF, what's your question or your topic for tonight?
Yeah, good evening. Yeah, I've been interested lately in the advent of the quantum computing phenomenon. And in particular, its implications for cybersecurity. And I looked into it a bit, and I see that there are, you know, many, many methods that are being pursued to develop the technology, including superconducting, which requires all that cooling, and trapped ion, and photonics, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, they all involve either the way in which qubits are, you know, made and the way in which they're manipulated, and they all have their pluses and minuses, but there's no definitive technology that is being pursued to, you know, be the quantum computing technology that becomes dominant in the long run. But the implications for cybersecurity, I think, are very interesting because quantum supremacy, quote unquote, has been established by Google, or they claim it has, and that they have a quantum computer. that is capable of performing calculations far in excess of any even conventional supercomputer. So let me just drop it a second. So I was wondering, you know, once quantum computing comes into its own, and it seems to me that it will eventually, it's just a question of how long it will take, it will be able to, theoretically, make for big problems in terms of what our current cybersecurity situation is. In other words, its ability to take what is now public key cryptographic systems and crack them. Almost instantaneously, it would seem. And so what about that kind of a problem? I mean, in classical computing and the way cybersecurity is done now, according to the algorithms that they deploy in order to encrypt things, it's really a matter of factoring integers, you know, and that these large calculations are too difficult for classical computers to crack, or at least not easily, but that once we have a quantum computer that is exponentially faster than classical computers are, and using Shor's algorithm and all that, that they will be able to take all the things that are protecting web pages, encrypted emails, other data, and crack them overnight. So my question is, are there any thoughts out there on this, KA2UTF?
AC2GS. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people working about on a lot of different things, and you kind of said a lot of things, so probably not going to remember everything that you brought up. It's not factoring integers, it's factoring prime numbers. So in other words, the way that RSA type of encryption that runs all the Internet is based on the fact that the product of two large prime numbers is very difficult. You know, you can give the product, and if you had to sit there with a pen and paper and try and factor the two large prime numbers that multiplied gives you that key, it would take you an eternity. And so RSA-type encryption that uses prime number factoring is kind of the underlying method of 99% of the cybersecurity, unfortunately, because it's relatively easy to do and it hasn't quite been broken yet. Quantum computers don't really use much in the way of superconductors, although they could utilize them. The reason for the cryogenic freezing and the chandelier shape of almost all the quantum computers that have been photographed is because quantum entanglement lasts longer if you use it under a low temperature than a high temperature. If the temperature is too high, the entanglement breaks and qubits no longer are qubits. So that's the primary reason for the cryogenic temperature controls. The promises have been very big, and the actual events have been very small. Unfortunately, quantum computers are kind of like a fusion power generators. They'll be here in 20 years. It's kind of the same with quantum. You mentioned how we both mentioned how you factor prime numbers. The problem is, theoretically, quantum computers should be able to do it amazingly fast, yet with the current technology and number of qubits capable of being maintained, I think the only factor that they've been able to actually accomplish is the number 15. 15 can be factored into 5 and 3. Unfortunately for them, you could do that factoring and I could do that factoring. So although it demonstrates the underlying principle, they haven't documented the ability to factor large products of prime numbers. Theoretically, yes. Practically, no. So again, when will they be able to accomplish it to the point where computer cryptography will be broken? Well, you know, some people with a bad sense of humor might say 20 years in the future. No one knows. It's being done. Is there anyone working on what happens if that happens? Yes. People are looking into other methods of encryption that are not amenable to quantum computers. Quantum computers are not just supercomputers. They're very weird computers that are capable of having a very large number of possible answers simultaneously. And when you collapse the...
KA2UTF, KD2FIU. If you're still there, is Roy out or is the repeater down? Gary, if you hear me, just respond.
The repeater timed out, that's all.
Yeah,
you moved in the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Okay, let's see if I'm back. Yeah, I'm back. Okay, it's just, you know, you had a lot of questions, and unfortunately I didn't pause to kind of break it into smaller parts. But hopefully you kind of got the gist of it. It's a theoretical construct, and they're spending millions of dollars on it, and they're promoting it like nobody's business, but the promise has yet to really been fulfilled. There's theories and there's indications, but no one has ever built a quantum computer that's been able to break a realistic product of two large prime numbers yet. Like I said, as far as my reading has gone, they were able to factor 15 into 3 and 5.
Dominant.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. For you, Jeff, to confirm correct. We have four stages in classical bits 0001, 10, and 11. And qubit can present multiple stages simultaneously. Then if we take the largest quantum computer has 1,121 qubits. We're talking about a stage that is somehow, somewhat compatible to Atari computers comparing to what we have right now in traditional technology. In Poland, they have founded a computer having 40 qubits. And it's one of the few in Europe. And we have in the United States 1,121. I mean, what kind of technology do we have? How many operations can we make? And to HGN, thank you.
I don't think you could measure... someone has an echo on. I don't think you could... It doesn't have the same specs as standard operating CPUs. It doesn't kind of go through different algorithms that way. So I don't know if you can... You can't directly correlate a standard operating silicon-based binary... type of computer to a quantum computer.
The Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Okay, the link is gone. It's kind of difficult to compare the two. They work so incredibly different. The nature of the programming is incredibly different. The underlying concept is that normal computers have only two states, the one and zero. I'm not quite sure what you mean by 00 and 01 and 10. It's a zero or a one. Qubits can have a large number of values simultaneously because their quantum devices they exist in a superposition of a lot of different states simultaneously. But when you when you interact with the entanglement, you collapse the wave function. It collapses to a finite exact state. So you're able to have a qubit coexist in multiple states, and then you can program them to